Brightfoot with great local programming on Sunrise from the Center on WRCE.
On today's morning show from WRCO and WRCE, we're pleased to be talking about a special event coming up this very weekend. The Pine Valley Repeaters will be involved in that. We're going to talk today and educate you a little bit and educate myself on amateur radio. And here to join us, including Club President Mike Kaufman and Club Vice President Phil Wallace, Field Day Rep Jeff Williams is here today as well to kind of give you a little bit of an insight on what we're talking about. Phil, it seems like we just did this. You guys had to get together last year, didn't you?
Though this is an annual event, so with the ARRL, they do this. What is it? The third or fourth weekend of every June, and it's amateur radio operators from all over the world get together, and we all try to make contacts with each other and various different forms of communications from AM, FM, PSK. There's all kinds of different modes that we use and whatnot to try to make contacts all over the United States and all over the world. So,
how long have you been a member?
I started with this club in 2008, so I've been here a little while.
Do you have a good number of people from Southwest Wisconsin in your group?
I don't know. Mike, how many people would we have in the club now? About
I think about 25. I think there's about 25 in the group right now.
Okay. It's one of those things that you do have to take tests and be licensed by the FCC. My call sign is KC9QQQ, which is pretty easy for most people to remember. Mike Kaufman, our president, he's W9.
B9SLI.
There you go. And then let me introduce Jeff Williams over here. He's kind of our engineer guru. He's very smart in a lot of the technical aspects of radio and radio workings. He just rebuilt one of our HF rigs that we use in our club once in a while, too. But Jeff is N7TTQ.
Correct.
Jeff, how did you get interested in this particular medium?
In
ham radio?
Ham radio. Well, I graduated with a bachelor's in electronics engineering, and I was working in the field. And even well before then, I wanted to get my license, but I didn't have the time or effort or motivation to get my code. So I had to wait till literally the day that the code requirement was dropped. And it was dropped, I think, successfully based on the level of license you were getting. But anyways, I got my technician's license, which allows you to operate sort of handy talkie radios, FM. And then you move up, and there's a little slice of shortwave you can use, HF, that we call it. And then from there, you know, I kept doing that. And then I kind of got sidetracked by the internet because I could see a lot of things on the internet I was getting via ham radio. And then let it expire and lapse, and my grace period elapsed. And I started all over again in 2011. I had to go back and get my call sign as a vanity call sign. But, you know, all this time I was working doing tests and measurement for RF and microwave for companies in Portland, Oregon. You can tell I'm a transplant based on my accent or lack thereof. When I moved out here, I looked for the nearest ham radio club, these guys. And then I get sort of random parts to fix or configure or things like that. There are others that are not necessarily members of this club, although some are, that configure some of the more internet and digital things we're doing up on the, what'd you call it, the East Side Tower.
Tower Hill.
But
yep.
but the activities here are to, you know, bring people into ham radio and get them to get their tests and mm-hmm. start using it. We have a weekly net on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. so that people practice using their net control etiquette. We have a representative in the group at KC9CMD, Chris, who's also an Aries Races representative, and those are emergency organizations that ham radio operators can use to coordinate during times of emergency with weather and what have you.
So it goes back in time. I mean, it's something that I remember as a kid, and it goes way back to, I mean, I have a radio that from the 40s that picked up shortwave, you know. I mean, maybe you could kind of talk about the differences and what shortwave is and things
well,
like that.
Well, HF and shortwave are one and the same frequency-wise. It covers from just above the AM band, I think 1.8 megahertz, maybe it's 2 megahertz, all the way up to 30 megahertz. Beyond that, and there's all sorts of stuff in there. There's shortwave broadcast stations, as you mentioned, and there's also amateur radio bands, some slices in there that are ironically harmonically related, 40 meters, 20 meters, 10 meters, and then some oddball ones around. And there's also some utility stations. I used to do a lot of listening myself. There's some odd stuff out there, which is great. Uh-huh. I caught a pirate station tuning in because I was in a member of Mars Military Auxiliary Radio System when I first restarted in 2011, and one pops up. So you just spin the dial. And you'll long-distance aircraft when they're crossing the Pacific or Atlantic. They don't use it as much anymore because they're using satellite primarily, but it's still out there. Then above that is what they call VHF, which is sort of what you're accustomed to seeing with handy talkie. There's a gap, and then there's UHF. So VHF is about 146 meg. UHF is 440 meg, so it's up even higher. And then there's all sorts of stuff above that. I do, and I have my own 900 megahertz. They call it it's a repeater node. And I'm the only one who uses it. So, and there's stuff above that. So,
okay. Good to learn that. And of course, Phil, you and I grew up in the 70s. CB was that was the big thing, Citizens Band at that time.
Well, I want to reiterate this to a lot of listeners that ham radio, as the, cultural term of amateur radio anyway, mm-hmm. Is far and above anything that CB radio. CB radio is kind of, in my lingo, I call it the children's band because, there's no license for it. You can buy a CB radio fairly inexpensive and just get on there and just start chatting and chawing with whoever. And it's unregulated and uncontrolled. Basically, there's 40 channels of pure nonsense. But I don't want people to refer to us as, just an overgrown CB radio club, because we're much, much more than that. Like you've heard from Jeff over here, we're people who experiment in radio, we're engineers in radio, and different forms of communication. Now, Mike can tell you a little bit about our D-Star network that we're putting up around the state right now. I know your listeners can't see this, but I have a little handheld radio that is a D-Star digital radio, there's different, I'm going to go into some technical jargon that many might not understand, but there's different reflectors in the digital communication world. Now, each one of the digital repeaters is hooked to the internet, and they're all connected on the web. So if you're talking on this digital repeater up here on our Tower Hill up here, you're also connected to a horde of other repeaters that could be on that same reflector, so to speak. 19 Bravo is the one that most everybody in Wisconsin uses. Now, I have also heard truck drivers have gotten into amateur radio and D-Star radio. There's one driver I know that is in Wisconsin. He has a friend of his that is in South Carolina. and they talk via D-Star when he's in his truck going up the interstate in Wisconsin, and he's talking to a truck driver in South Carolina that's on Interstate 95 over 1,200, 1,500 miles away. Now, you can't do that with CB radio. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't. Yep. Who'd ever thought that you'd have that technology to be able to do that?
And this little radio right here actually has GPS built into it too. So like if I'm trying to see like where I am communicating with another operator, it'll actually bring up, if I key up on their radio, they will see the direction that I am from their radio and the actual distance within a tenth of a mile. So I could be calling somebody and they reply, and on my radio it says so-and-so is 112.8 miles northeast of you, or for example, whatever. But yeah, D-Star, I'm just getting into it. Mike knows a lot more about digital D-Star radio than I do, and he's the one that kind of talked me into starting to get into it too now. So we have a VHF and a UHF digital repeater. Anybody that lives in Richland Center area, you see two great big huge towers up here on top of Tower Hill. One is the U.S. Cellular Tower, and our radio group has the one that's right underneath it. It's a little 190-foot tower or whatever it was. But we have a lot of stuff going on that tower, too. So,
yeah. Anyway. Mike, why is amateur radio important to you? Why has it been through your years, your career and everything?
Well, I'm kind of a geek, and I've been a geek forever.
We all have.
So, anyway, the club actually got started about 1975, and there was five of us. I was one of the original founding members. Richard Newman is the only other surviving member of the group here that started it. We had Cliff Wilson, Gus Slayback, and Carl Sievertson. We were the original people that started the club. And we built our first repeater from scratch, and we got it up on top of the hill. And it kind of went dormant for a little bit, and then all of a sudden we started having more ham radio operators in the community, and things started to perk up again. And, you know, all of the things, all of the technology that we see in our cell phones and all has been started with ham radio. For example, I was making phone calls from my car in 1975. And how many years later before we finally started seeing cell phones? The internet came on out before that. We had packet radio where we hooked a computer up to a radio, and we were sending text and pictures and that back and forth. We had slow scan TV. We were sending pictures back and forth to each other over the radio way before that started happening on cell phones. So a lot of the technology that we have here today, you know, kind of started with ham radio. And we just keep going forward with experimenting, and I kind of find it interesting to go ahead and do that. And there's so many different facets to amateur radio. You know, some people like to do what we call rag chewing, and they just want to talk to people. And, you know, I've been kind of a traveler in my life, and, you know, if I'm going to go to a new country or so, I usually go on the ham radio and make a friend in that country. And then we had a case here where I made a friend in Iceland, and we went over to Iceland and visited him. And my wife is also a ham radio. In fact, she's one of the examiners that can give the exam. And so she's actually one class up above me. And she keeps prodding me. I hold a general class license, and she has an extra class license. I guess that's because she's a bigger geek or smarter than I am.
You so, married well, it sounds like.
Right? I did very well, yeah. And she's also part of our ham radio club. So the club is doing well, and there's so many different reasons why people will go ahead and decide to get a ham radio license. Some people are survivalists. In other words, if our infrastructure goes down, what other way do you have to communicate but by ham radio? I talked to my wife from a remote mountainside in New Zealand, to her in her office here in Richland Center via ham radio. And you couldn't do that via cell phone because there was no cell phone towers anywhere close to where we were in New Zealand. So it's a fascinating hobby. The other thing I guess that we'd mention is it also, we like to serve the community in times of need, times of disaster, tornadoes, storm spotting, whatever seems to be the need in the community, the ham radio group is out there ready to go and provide communications. So anyway, I enjoy it. And we're looking forward to this field day that that is coming up here. And Jeff was tasked with the project of going ahead and getting everything coordinated, getting it all set on up. And what we actually go ahead and do is we cannot use any commercial electricity or anything. Everything has to be done right there, so that in case of an emergency, this is what Field Day is all about. It's a contest, and it's a chance for ham radio operators to go ahead and set up their equipment and a remote place with no conveniences, and see how many people they can talk to.
Is this something, Jeff, that goes on all over the world then?
Well, the I'm not sure about outside this country, but I'm pretty sure they do. ARRL is an American organization. However, the activities coincide with people all over the world. Now, they may be contacting you as an individual, but they certainly can. Or I don't know if there are organizations that are countrywide for each country that are also coordinating. That I don't know. But everybody knows we're having a field day on that 24-hour period, June 22nd, 23rd. And that's that. Hopefully that answers your question.
It does. So then it will be at the same spot as last year at the Richland Airport then?
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
Field days can actually be done by people at their houses, even as a group, as long as they identify themselves. But Mike was generous enough to have helped coordinate getting us into a spot that's behind some of the hangars. That's a grass area, which is very convenient and stays out of the way of other activities. To put stations, and we'll have three stations there, which allows people to do different things, or if somebody wants to do contesting and there's room for somebody who's doing something for the first time, we won't interfere.
So somebody can stop by, and as long as they're with one of you or somebody who has a license, they can do some work then?
Yeah, as with as in every case of a ham radio transmission, as long as there's a licensed operator sitting next to you and you identify as being with that person, you're okay.
That'll be a good opportunity for people to do that and kind of check out the technology. And is there always something new coming up in this?
Well, there are so many fields. I call them fields of endeavor in ham radio that you can literally pick and choose. Now, within AHF, the trend obviously is for digital communications. Now, it's being done on channels that were used to be used for voice, but now have been designated for digital, which is just a slice of each of those bands I referred to, the 40, 20, 15, 10. So of those, the lower part's usually used for digital. It started out with CW, Morse code, and then they started doing more automated things. RTTY, which was an old teletype format that has been used on phone lines since the 40s or 30s or even before then. And that became standard. And then they moved on to some other. There are dozens of modes, we call them, of how to get the digital signal into an audio form that is transmitted out your transmitter and received the same way. Right now, the one that is sort of the most popular is called FT8, which is a sort of a low signal, high distance, which is great, digital mode that We will have one station dedicated for, which is great. KC9LBO, Ralph Hendrickson will be running that station. And there are subsets. There's Whisper. There's WSJT8. There's all these. Most of the new ones were invented by a guy, Stan Taylor. I don't remember that. Joe Taylor. Finally got his name. And he's sort of refined these slow speed and high propagation distance modes. And so those are the latest trends. But there's many others. You just pick one and you'll have people who are fans of it. So that's so
what he's referring to in, like, say, the FT8 mode or whatever. It's a very low wattage transmit and receive, somewhere in the half watt up to maybe 5 watts. There's one friend of mine that is in Mesa Maney that built a small little radio out of a Luke, little secrets box, you know, the little metal secrets box.
Sure.
Yeah. he built a little radio out of a secrets box that had a little antenna on it. And he was talking on a half a watt, and he was doing HF propagation, you know, talking to people hundreds of miles away, you know, with a little hand-built thing, you know, that, I mean, he was doing it more in Morse code. I mean, he wasn't actually doing voice communications, but, you know, he's still communicating in one form or another.
And I think I always think of your club, Phil, when there's bad weather, because you have weather spotters out there and about there. Let's talk
yes.
about you.
That's one of the primary reasons why I got into this back in 2008 is I wanted to be able to serve my community in one form or another. And weather's kind of always been a very interesting topic for me anyways. So watching the clouds and watching them roll in and being able to report back to with our radios that we're set up with on our 146.91 megahertz, our primary repeater for our club, that repeater will also can be heard by the La Crosse weather station up there in La Crosse, up on the bluff. And they communicate directly with us through our repeater, you know, and so if we see something on the ground down here, then we can call up to them and say, hey, you know, this is what I'm seeing, and they can issue an alert. They'll call, you know, and put the alert out to, like, your radio station, that you can forewarn, you know, people in the community, hey, we got such and such is coming our way, or we got a tornado warning or whatever, and this is where it's located. Well, guys like me that are the eyes and ears on the ground for the weather service, I mean, they're watching their radar. They're looking at weather measurements, barometers, temperatures, humidities, and all that kind of stuff. But we're the eyes and ears on the ground actually seeing stuff. And with our new radios and the D-Star capabilities, we could send a picture right directly to them on the radio and say, here's what we're seeing in the sky, and then they can see it and evaluate more, and
they decipher it then when they
yep.
see the picture.
Yeah, they're okay. The final ones that determine whether the warnings get issued and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, like I said, we're the eyes and ears on the ground. Now, weather spotters are different than weather chasers or storm chasers. So storm chasers are, you know, to me, that's more like a thrill seeker. You know, somebody who wants to go ride the roller coaster. Okay, you know, that's fine. You know, you can go do that if you want to. I'm going to watch from a safer distance, and I'm going to observe the clouds from, like, maybe 4 or 5 miles away and say, hey, you know, look, this is what I'm seeing. You know, I did have one small little tornado here a few years ago, that the one that took out the front of the O'Brien Brothers building and the one that took the roof off of the mobile oil change. I was actually following and chasing that one. I went right up over the top of my truck.
Mm-hmm. I remember that, yeah. And going back to the tornado in Viola, mm-hmm. I remember you guys were really instrumental in keeping people safe at that time, too.
That one was a little bit before my time, I think. I wasn't quite into the group, but that was one of the events that primarily inspired me to become someone that I can go and I can either spot and help, and, you know, if I can even save one life, I'm super happy about it. I think, I'm not sure who all was in the group, and we had the flood. Glenn was in the group. You know, Glenn's back over here, too. But we were instrumental in helping out with radio communications in Viola when they had a flood up there. What was that, 2007, 2008, something like that, or whatever it was. Yeah. And a lot of the communications were underwater and underground, so phone lines were down, primary communication lines were down. You couldn't get word in and out of there. Another example, a prime example, one that I like to use is, how about that big F5 tornado that came through Joplin, Missouri a few years back. I mean, just totally wiped out the whole town. No cell towers, no cell communications, no phone lines, no nothing. I mean, the only people that were talking in and out of there were people on ham radio. And I, as an HF operator in my radio room at home, was actually doing radio relays. You know, somebody would call out of Joplin, Missouri, say, hey, we got so-and-so wants to get word to somebody in Wisconsin. Okay, so a Wisconsin operator like myself would take the message and then make a phone call, say, hey, I just got a radio communications from so-and-so, one of your relatives in Joplin, Missouri. Just wanted to let you know they're okay. And so that was the way to get word out where no other form of communication was available. And that's one of the things that ham radio or amateur radio is very well known for.
You as a pilot, Mike, you know, you've kind of used it during your business too, haven't you?
Well, you can't actually use amateur radio for any kind of business purposes, but you can use it for public safety. And for example, when there was some of the flooding, I was up in the airplane with the ham radio, and I was talking to people on the ground and giving them some directions as to, you know, what is happening and what I'm seeing from up in the air and that. So we do have a ham radio in the airplane as well, and I can talk to my wife from any place in the world with that ham radio. Another thing that our club has been instrumental in doing, and we've had very, very good support from the National Weather Service, as Phil was going ahead and saying, and every year the National Weather Service has a Storm Spotter Appreciation Day, and I usually go to that. And some years back, when I was down there, they made the comment that Richland Center did not have a weather cam or weather camera. And so our group was very instrumental in putting up on top of the hill a weather camera. And I want to thank all of the community organizations that, you know, have helped us and made donations and that. So we have a weather camera up on top of the hill that is literally phenomenal. And so we can go ahead and monitor the city for storms that are approaching, storms in the distance, things that we may not have a spotter in a position to see. So it's located up on top of the tower, and Richland Electric Co-op has been very instrumental in working with us on the camera, and we have a second camera that will be deployed sometime in the near future on another one of Richland Electric Co-op's towers. And just so many of the community organizations have helped us with funding for different projects that we've worked on.
How does that camera work then? Do all the members have access to that video?
It's on a very, very private network and very secure network. And you need to have a little special box. As a member of the club, these little boxes are specially programmed. And so you go ahead and you hook that little box to your computer, and you can bring up the camera. The camera has a tilt and zoom and pan, so you can look at all around the community. And it is absolutely amazing. And the quality of the camera, for night operations. It's amazing to see what has been developed. And, of course, that's a commercial unit that was purchased, but really works well. So, you know, we're doing everything we can, you know, to support our community because our community supports us.
We'll be back with more about the upcoming field day this weekend. The Pine Valley Repeaters are here. Phil Wallace, Jeff Williams, and Mike Kaufman, and we'll have more in a moment. They're in the studio with us. They're a bunch of hams, I can tell you that.
Is heating up at Town & Country TV and Appliance. Discover unbeatable deals on top brands like Whirlpool, KitchenAid, Amana, Maytag, Speed Queen, and Frigidaire. The Town & Country team will install your new appliances and recycle your old ones. Now with two locations to serve you. The Superstore at 2490 Highway 14 in Richland Center and the newly opened showroom at downtown Reedsburg at 206 East Main Street. For store hours and details about the incredible summer savings sale, visit townandcountryrc.com.
WRCO 100.9 FM, Richland Center.
News Time is sponsored by Computer Connections, Y-Connect Wireless, bringing high-speed internet to rural communities. And by Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy, your full-service pharmacies, caring for you and about you. Also sponsored by BL Signs, helping your business grow. Today's forecast calls for a high of 80 with showers and thunderstorms developing. There's a flash flood watch that has been issued and will be in effect this afternoon through tomorrow afternoon for most of our area. Right now in Richland Center with fog, it is 65 degrees.
BL Signs of Richland Center has grown significantly, helping other businesses grow. In the last decade, businesses of all sizes have trusted the team at BL Signs, from developing ideas to get started to creation, installation, and reliable service afterward. BL Signs' promise of projects done well, done on time, and done on budget comes with the experience and knowledge to turn your sign into one of your most important investments. Visit BL Signs of Richland Center online at blsignage.com.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I am Phil Nee. Here is what you need to know. Wisconsin has more people working than at any time in its history. Department of Workforce Development Section Chief Scott Hodek says the continued low unemployment rate is good for workers because there are plenty of positions open that may have better pay and benefits than your current job. Over 3 million people are now employed in the state, and the unemployment level is at 2.9%, about a point below the national average. Missing 3-year-old Elijah Vu's mother, 31-year-old Katrina Bauer, could have a resolution in her case. That was the statement from Bauer's attorney, Ann Larson, during a status conference at the Manitowoc County Courthouse Thursday afternoon. Bauer is facing child neglect charges after she allegedly dropped off Elijah to her boyfriend, Jesse Vang, so he could make him a man. Bauer will be back in court on July 1st for a scheduling conference in front of Judge Robert DeWayne. She also faces two counts of resisting or obstructing a peace officer. Vang will be back in court next Friday for his own status conference. Whether former UW lacrosse chancellor Joe Gao will teach classes is now in the hands of a committee. The former chancellor and university officials wrapped up their arguments on Thursday about whether he should keep his tenured faculty position. The hearing committee chair said a decision about that is due as soon as practicable, practical per university rules. The decision will be a written report delivered to both Gao and interim UWL chancellor Betsy Morgan. She'll then either adopt the recommendation or send it to the UW System Board of Regents if she disagrees with the committee's recommendation. Gao was removed as chancellor last December after he and his wife produced and posted pornographic videos online. University officials then moved in March to fire him from his tenured position. A Democratic activist who owns Minocqua Brewing Company is again at odds with local officials. Oneida County's Planning Committee has ordered the business to close its outdoor seating areas for 90 days due to violations of their conditional use permit, according to WAOW-TV. The group made the decision on Thursday during a lengthy, tense meeting, saying conditions need to be met before they can revisit a beer garden setup. Among those conditions, the parking lot of the business needs to be paid
paved. Owner Kirk Bankstead was reportedly thrown out of Thursday's meeting at the beginning of the discussion. Committee members said politics had nothing to do with their decision. They just want to see the conditions met. Two people were injured in a UTV crash last weekend. Richland County Dispatch received a report of the crash on County Highway N, just east of Hustler's Ridge, last Saturday night around 8:30. Responding units arrived on scene and found the driver, Dana Taylor, 33, of Richland Center, partially pinned underneath the UTV. The driver was extricated and transported directly to UW Hospital for her injuries. The passenger, Michaela Baker, 18, of Richland Center, was transported to the Richland Hospital with minor injuries. Initial investigation of the crash showed that the UTV was heading westbound on County Highway N, negotiating a curve, and hit the edge of the road, causing the UTV to skid across the road and overturn onto the driver's side, partially pinning the driver underneath. We've hit the middle of June Dairy Month in Wisconsin, but there are still many dairy breakfasts to enjoy. The Vernon County Dairy Breakfast will be held Saturday at Goad Acres, LLC on Wire Hollow Road in rural Viroqua. Enjoy pancakes, eggs, sausage, or steak. Work on the new bridge that connects Crawford County, Wisconsin to Lansing, Iowa is on hold due to high water. The Mississippi River is in action stage, according to the National Weather Service, leaving the construction site for the new bridge underwater. The 93-year-old existing bridge, which was closed earlier this year due to structural issues, remains open. A live video feed of the bridge construction run by the Iowa DOT shows construction materials underwater. The river is expected to crest near the end of the month. A pair of Republican candidates toured a farm in La Crosse County on Wednesday. Representative Derek Van Orden and Senate candidate Eric Hovde, who is challenging Democrat Tammy Baldwin this fall, were at Morningstar Dairy near Onalaska to talk about agriculture policy, including the farm bill. Both candidates said they heard about the burdens of environmental regulation on farming efforts. The farm has hosted other prominent Republicans, including a visit by former Vice President Mike Pence in 2020. The annual Gospel to Haiti benefit will be held at the Richland County Fairgrounds this weekend. The Mississippi Catfish Supper will be held from 4 until 8 tonight, with a flower auction following the supper. The auction begins Saturday morning again at 9. A large amount of items, including furniture, food, bake sale, and gun raffle, will be featured. The Brewer Public Library in Richland Center will host Community Safety Day tomorrow. Learn about cyber safety, pedestrian safety, and more. Children ages 5 to 18 can learn or refresh bike safety skills in the bike rodeo. With course start times at 10, 10:30, and 11, attendees should bring their bicycle and helmet. Free helmets will be available while supplies last for those that need one. Courtesy of Julie Karen, State Farm Insurance. You can register your bike for free as well. Richland Center Fire Department, Richland County EMS, Richland Center Police Department, and Richland County Sheriff's Department will be present. See the equipment and meet K-9 Aaron of the Richland Center Police Department. There will also be a K-9 demonstration at 11:30 and community booths, food, photo ops, and giveaways tomorrow in Richland Center during the Community Safety Day, sponsored by the Brewer Public Library.
It's internet for everyone from Y Connect Wireless. Y Connect Wireless provides high-speed internet to rural communities throughout southwest Wisconsin, with options for unlimited internet with no contract required, so you can stream all your favorites. Catch the local broadcast with a professionally installed TV antenna. Call 524-1579 today and ask how to save with bundle packages, or visit WIWC.net for details. Why Connect Wireless?
Some rain on the way again today, tonight, and tomorrow as well. A high of 80 for the day. Tomorrow's high near 80. It looks like it will all kind of go away by Sunday with a nice day planned before some thunderstorms likely by Monday evening. In Richland Center, we have received a little bit of rain, not a lot yesterday, 7/100ths of an inch. And right now we are at 65 degrees after the midnight reading of 66. The area does remain under a flash flood watch from 1 o'clock this afternoon until tomorrow afternoon for Vernon, Crawford, and Richland counties, and until 7 Saturday night for Sauk County.
The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy has exceptional caring staff and great services. They are a locally owned, independent pharmacy, proudly serving the surrounding area communities. The Boscobel Pharmacy and Center Pharmacy is committed to helping patients manage their medications. The pharmacists work along with patients and their healthcare providers to find an individualized plan to help each patient maximize the benefits of their medications while minimizing or preventing adverse effects, interactions, costs, and waste.
Hi, Travis with Wirtz Floor and Home in Spring Green. Want to give your house a new look? Whether it's one room or a whole house, we can help. From the industry's best Carestan carpet to exceptional hardwood floors by Mirage, or even if it's vinyl plank, we have it. Want a new kitchen or bath? We can help with that too. Quality products and quality service from a company you can trust. Wirtz Floor and Home.
Step into a world of charm and discovery at the Avoca Mercantile. Embrace the joys of spring. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Explore the extensive array of unique and budget-friendly finds, from exquisite crafts to delightful home decor and gifts for all occasions. With new arrivals daily, there's always a fresh surprise in store at the Avoca Mercantile. Support local artisans and treat yourself to a delightful shopping experience. They can't wait to welcome you.
Sports Time is sponsored by Mr. G's Downtown Viroqua and in the Richland Square Shopping Center, your local source for clothes, boots, shoes, and for everything in style you need for work and play. And by the Homesteader Store, Southern Wisconsin's tractor experts. We'll take a look at the schedule, the scoreboard, and the Brewers game last night. A loss for the Crew. Those stories in just a moment. Looking for the best in shoes and clothing? Look no further than Mr. G's Shoes and Clothing in Richland Center. Mr. G's has it all, from stylish outfits to durable work boots. Whatever you need, Mr. G's has you covered. Visit them today at 140 Richland Square or give them a call at 647-3543. Mr. G's Shoes and Clothing, where quality meets style.
Choose Mr. G's.
Last night in hometown baseball, the Casanova Reds were challenged by the visiting Wisconsin Dells Rivermen, and it was Casanova getting its second walk-off of the year in night league ball. Cas took the lead in the second inning when Monty Jennings walked and eventually scored on a base hit by Houston Boland. The Dells scored to take a 2-1 lead in the fourth when Peyton Steiner tripled in a run and scored. The Reds got the lead back in the fourth with Isaac Jennings' two-run double off the left field fence. The Dells tied the game at 3 in the 7th without a hit. That set the stage for the dramatic walk-off in the bottom of the 7th. With 2 out, Parker Jennings had walked, went to 2nd on an error, and to 3rd on a fielder's choice, and he scored on Brady McGlynn's double, which was his second hit of the night. Nathan Bauer pitched the first 6 and a 3rd before Monty Jennings came on in relief and got the win. 4-3 the final last night for the Reds over the Dells. Reedsburg was the winner over Mazamani, 7-4. Sauk Prairie over Dodgeville, 10-6. Belleville, 12. Ridgeway, 2. And Evansville beat Pine Bluff Mount Horeb, 10-5. In local baseball tonight, Arena at Plain, Argyle at Dodgeville, of course, weather permitting. After coming from behind to tie the game, the Brewers were victimized by a walk-off home run by Jake Cronenworth Thursday night, losing 6-5. Milwaukee had erased a 3-run deficit in the 8th and 9th to tie the Padres. Joel Piamps took the loss in relief. San Diego had started strong with 4 runs in the first and led the entire game until the Brewers tied it in the 9th inning. Here's manager Pat Murphy.
It was back and forth. I mean, a lot happened in this game, but, you know, they turned a big double play there at a big time, and the ball down, great play. Ball down third, it was it. You know, we lost the ball in the lights that you can't do anything about. That was a run. We didn't turn a double play when we normally do, but you can look back at that.
The teams play the second game of the four-game weekend series tonight, with Colin Ray getting the start. Elsewhere yesterday in Thursday Major League Baseball, Arizona 5-2 over Washington, the Dodgers 5, Colorado 3, St. Louis 6-5 over San Francisco. In the American League, Cleveland 6, Seattle 3, Tampa Bay beat Minnesota 7-6, Houston 5, the White Sox 3, Kansas City 3-2 over Oakland, and Baltimore was winner over the Yankees, that final 17-5. Brewer rookie left-hander Robert Gasser has decided to have Tommy John surgery, which will sideline him for approximately 12 months. The 25-year-old pitcher's decision came after he received multiple opinions on the best way to treat the left flexor strain that sent him to the injured list on June 5th. He is 2-0 with a 2.57 ERA in five starts, all Brewer wins. Wisconsin volleyball coach Kelly Sheffield gets another bump in pay after another successful season. Sheffield's new contract pays him a base salary of $575,000 a year. It runs through the 2028 season and promises him a raise of $25,000 a year. His Badgers have made it to the Final Four five times in 11 years, and Sheffield has an overall coaching record of 292-61. His teams have made it to the Sweet 16 every season, five Big Ten Conference championships, and five Final Four appearances. I'm Phil Nee with an update on sports.
All Cub Cadet mowers are on sale now at the Homesteader Store. Hi, this is Rick. The sale includes industry-leading Cub Cadet Ultima zero-turn mowers with both lap bar and steering wheel units. The sale includes the quality Enduro Series lawn and garden tractors. They are all on sale, so come and save $150 to $500. See the full line of Cub Cadet products at your mower headquarters, the Homesteader Store, Highway 14 East, or at homesteaderstore.com.
Welcome back to our morning show on WRCO Radio. Some glitches there, man.
That's the WRCO bloopers.
Garbage in, garbage out. Everything stopped there for a second. We are glad to be back with you to talk about the upcoming field day for Pine Valley Repeaters. Jeff Williams, Mike Kaufman, Phil Wallace in the studio with us. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, Jeff, you talked about getting a license. Now, I remember back in the day when I finished broadcast school, that was the big thing. I had to get a license just to be on the air. You know, all of us had to. That's no longer true for those that are in radio. We don't have to do that anymore.
Well, but, right. In amateur radio, you do.
But you do. So I'm curious, how difficult is it for someone to apply for a license?
Well, I mean, the physical application's filling something out, but the study,
right,
and preparation for the lowest level, which is called the technician's license, is fairly simple. I think there's a pool of questions available on the internet, from which they draw all questions that are given to you when you get an examiner, such as Mike's wife, Linda Kaufman, KC9HHF, gives you the exam on a sheet of paper. So, I would give... It's hard for me to tell you because I'm a double E with RF experience, covering 35 years, but you could literally spend maybe 40 hours and you'd be very prepared.
So a lot of the questions that are in the pool, some of them are regarding basic electronics, here is a battery. This is a plus side, and this is the negative side, and DC current is direct current, and it goes from positive to negative, okay, in a circuit. And alternating current, of course, it goes back and forth, And these are some of the basic questions, that the SEC wants you to kind of have a basic working knowledge of electricity and electric components and how they work. And that helps you get into experimenting with your radio and, okay, well, how do I tweak this and make this better? And what is a diode? How do you explain to everybody out there what a diode is? We see LED headlights on your cars. You know what that is? A light emitting diode. A diode is something that electricity only passes one way, and it doesn't revert back the other way. And there's more to it, and I won't go into a whole lot of the technical aspect, but you're learning all this as you go. And like Jeff says, the technician's license is fairly easy and it's fairly simple, and it also covers a lot of basic knowledge that you would need to operate. And then general, we'll go into more of like antenna configurations and so, you know, a little bit more knowledge. And then the extra, which I haven't taken yet, and of course Mike, he hasn't taken it yet either, so I'm thinking Linda's probably chomping at the bit wanting us to get some extra licenses there. And extras go a lot more complicated and complex. General, we'll talk about radio wave propagation, and what that means is how radio waves will bounce off of what layers in the atmosphere and what distances you can talk on and stuff like that. That was one of the things that interested me too. Back in my CB radio days and the truck diving days, you could talk skip, is what we used to call it.
Sure.
And basically all that is the radio waves are skipping off of certain layers in the atmosphere, depending on how charged they are right now. And I will tell you honestly, this field day right here, we have a lot of charged particles in the atmosphere, and there's going to be a lot of great propagation from what I've seen on some of the studies. So we should be able to do some good distance communications on this field day from Saturday and Sunday. So,
does weather have a factor? Because I know it does with our FM signal, especially if it's foggy and humid and things like that. Is it the same, Mike?
Yeah. A lot of times we talk about band openings on some of the VHF frequencies, and it's amazing. You know, flying in an airplane, and I'm flying in Wisconsin, and every once in a while I might hear Orlando control tower talking to an airplane, and these are due to band openings. And of course the amateur band is next door neighbor actually to the aircraft band, and it's very interesting. And when there's a band opening, you know, people are just get all excited, and regardless what they're doing, if they're at their job or whatever, they like to drop what they're doing and go on ahead and see it. Who can I talk to here with this band opening? And it's interesting. And of course the HF bands, you know, they're long range bands, and different times of the day, different bands are better than other bands, and that sort of thing. So there's just so many facets and interesting things about the amateur radio. I became an apartment dweller here, and I used to have a huge tower behind my house, and people that played golf always remembered I was living right on the golf course there, and I had this big antenna up with these big beams on it, and we'd turn those on around, and we'd point them at somebody, and we'd be able to talk to them. So I kind of miss that a little bit. And so anyway, we have HF in our mobile. So we can not do as good as we did when we had the big tower, but at least we can stay on the band.
Speaking of band openings, I mean, I was sitting on my HF rig at my house one time, and I was talking to a guy in Brownsville, Texas, way down there on the southern tip of Texas, and he was just, you know, driving back to home from work, you know, and he's just on his radio in his little truck or whatever it was that he was driving, and then talking to him as clean and as clear as you and I are sitting right here, and then 10 minutes later you can't get him at all.
It's gone,
you know. So it's gone, you know. It just depends on what clouds are moving over and where they, you know, what particles are charged in the atmosphere. So
sure. What about overseas? Have you had some contacts over there?
I have. I talked to a guy in Ireland one night, just on my little 100-watt radio right from the upstairs bedroom. It just happened that the radio propagation was just perfect, and we talked for about four and a half minutes, and exchanged call signs, and, you know, like I said, 5 minutes later, it was gone, and, you know, there was nothing. So, and I've talked to people in Canada, I've talked to people in the southern United States, Florida's a big one that you can get usually at about anywhere between, you know, our time, 11 1 p.m. and 1 a.m., 2 a.m., or whatever. I mean, you know, between midnight and 3 a.m., you'll hear a lot of what Mike called rag chewing. You know, these good old boys will talking from one end of Texas to the other end of California, you know, and they'll be sitting there talking and BSing all night long. So, so yeah.
Lots of chances. Have you had experiences with that, Jeff, talking to people?
Yeah, I certainly have. My most, I guess, remarkable ones were mobile, using a mobile HF antenna where you use a coil to tune the frequency that you're trying to transmit and receive on. And it was in an old Ford Taurus, and I was able to pick up Romania, Italy, Germany, and Russia.
That's great.
And I remember some of them by incident where I was driving physically. You know, it took several tries. You have to be patient. Not really one of my virtues, but when you're really focused, it will be. And the Romania one, I was driving down I-84 just before I hit the Blue Mountains in Oregon, and he was there, and I couldn't tell his call sign. It took 100 tries. Finally, I figured it out. I tried probably 30 or 40 times, then he got back to me, and that was quite the catch. And that's done with a little whip antenna on the back trunk of the car with a 100-watt radio that's just sitting in the car. So, you know, you can go, and people have gone much further, but that, you know, you can use a mobile setup to go vast distances.
Well, you have a big antenna set up at the field day on Saturday.
We'll have, I'm actually going to use a similar mobile antenna. It's called a screwdriver antenna, where you modify the inductance, and that's going to be mounted on the side of the trailer.
Great to have you in here today. Fascinating stuff. Jeff Williams, Field Day Rep, and Phil Wallace, Club Vice President, Mike Kaufman, Club President of Pine Valley Repeaters, and step out and see them on Saturday and find out more.
Tom Mueller from Mueller Implement is our guest on WRCO Radio. Tom, is this a good time of year to be buying a mower?
Well, it's actually the best time of the year. It's right in the heart of the season. We have 0% for 36 months on our Aaron's and Gravely products, and 0 for 24 months on our Husqvarna products. But not only that, both companies are rebating from basically $200 all the way up to $2,000 per unit. These are unheard of programs. Normally you see them very early in the spring and then they die away. But the season has been different, and it's definitely different weather. And, of course, when it rains, and when it doesn't. But we're going to get some heat and some rain, and that's all key to keeping the grass growing. And June should be a very busy month for a lot of people. With Father's Day coming up and all the other things happening, we're full of excitement out here.
Let's talk about buying mowers and things like that. When do the new models come out for the current models?
Well, the new models will probably come out late August. A lot of companies are not introducing new mowers this year, and that's understandable. The industry basically is going through what we call a downsizing turmoil. When I say that, some companies are just hanging on by the threads, and other companies are just decided that we've got enough new stuff out there. We're going to sell what we have and continue to produce a good product. Key here, though, is whether it's a 23 model or 24 model or 29 model or 32 model, it doesn't make any difference. It's the dealership that you're dealing with. So when you buy a product from us, you get full warranty, and it ranges from 3 years to 5 years, and it's based on years and hours, so it's very, very important to understand that. Key, too, is that every time they introduce something new, they add price to it, and so we're not hoping to see a lot of new products. There's been a lot of developments over the years to make these products last for 30 years. And because they do, you have that ability to keep them going and not have to rebuy them every time you turn around. But key behind that, of course, is you have to have great service and good parts and all the things that are required to keep you going. Miller Ripman prides himself on that. When we say that, we really mean what we're talking about. And, of course, when you do business with us, you're joining our family, and that is so important because we treat you that way. You walk through the door, you're important, and if you're not, then there's something wrong with the company, because that's the way it should be in real life. And, you know, we all want to feel important. All of us do. Why not go to a place that really treats you that way?
You got your robo-mower, you know, you get done so quickly. Now you're hanging out at the beach, I suppose, in your skivvies and just kind of kicking back, huh?
Well, if I hung out in my skivvies and kicked back, I'd scare a lot of women away, that's for sure.
Yeah.
What I would tell you, though, is the concept of the Robomower and its ability to what it's doing is unique and new, and it's something that you can see here at Mueller Implement. We call it Robo One. Technically, the other day it was running for a half a day. Today we're running it for a full day. Yes, it can mow 2.5 acres a day, and it can do it 24/7. So if you want a beautiful lawn, lush looking, and always pristinely cut, the Robos are out to go. But you can't see it unless you get here to Dodgeville, Wisconsin. So you've got to come to 4948 Highway YZ, right across from Midwest Roofing. And, of course, those little guys, Farm Fleet, our neighbors, they're still there, and they're in business as well. So a lot of reasons to stop to Dodgeville, especially if you're looking for great products. We're open 7:30 to 5:30, Monday through Friday, 7:30 to 12:30 on Saturday. And if you go to www.muellerrental.com, that's our internet site, you'll see a lot of things there. Go to Craigslist and punch in Mueller on the left-hand side, and you'll see all of our specials, including our used and a lot of things that you're not aware of we handle. Also, we have 15% off in our commercial saws and items, and we have discounts on everything. I don't care what it is right now, Phil. We have discounts, and it's very important. So those construction guys that want to come and buy a handheld cement saw, they're 10% off. If you're looking to buy a plate or something for compaction, they're 10% off. So there's chances.